From to another topic, Mike, I was about to send you Yep, that's me, Dev.
A is faction, P is for paranoid, A is for anger, out here in the void. C is for countdown, O is for over, let's see if you're let's smash time.
Welcome to Podcast on Fire 18. That's Asian Cinema and the Podcast. What else do you need to ken? I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me tonight we have Ken.
Good evening.
Scott.
Evening.
And the return of Mike Banna.
Hello.
Yep. Well, as usual, we'll just start off with the last movies watched. We'll start it with Mike, since you neglected us last week.
Well, due to house moving stuff, I haven't actually watched any movies, so this is going to be short. Well, not actually. I thought about this. See, in my small amount of research, I thought I'll pick out a film that I watched long before Puff, and so haven't discussed on it. So I'll revisit a film I really liked.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with Fighter in the Wind.
The Korean film?
Yep.
Right.
2004 Korean film. It's about Masai Yama, who was founder of a system of karate, very famous fighter. I believe, he was born in Korea when it was occupied by Japan. And then moved to Japan to be a pilot in the Second World War, I think it was. I believe his Korean name is, so we can drop it before I have to think too much. Anybody?
No.
Ken?
Korean cinema? What's Korean cinema?
I only need a name. Scott?
Stevie.
Steve.
No, it's Choi Badil, is it? Or Badale? Something like that.
A.K.A. Stevie Choi.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he was obviously a real-life karate badass. Mm-hmm. And the film... It's not an accurate biopic by any means. But it takes lots of key points in his life. From him first going to Japan to him becoming said karate badass. Mm-hmm. And it's an absolutely cracking film. I really love it. Action-wise, it's kind of simple, short, karate-style hits and stuff, so it's not going to have long, complex... shapes and stuff like you would expect in a kung fu film. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one hit, one kick, block, hit. So the fight's short, but they're all brilliantly choreographed. Choreographed by... Here we go again. See, now, I did a little bit of research, but clearly not enough, because I can't actually remember who choreographed it. It's the same guy who directed, choreographed and starred in City of Violence.
Can we mean something like... Right...
I know half his name, but I don't actually want to say it. Because I look like a dick.
Take a pause and do some research if you like.
Ken? Scott? I'm hoping... See, I was thinking, you know...
What's Korean cinema?
I've done a bit of research, but I'm thinking if I say stuff, then, you know... The other knowledgeable bods around about Ken, Scott, etc. Jump in and help me out.
Jung Doo Hung.
Will they bollocks? Yeah, that's the fella. Yeah, so the action is very good, but it's dressed with bucket loads of style, as a lot of Korean films are anyway, and it's directed really nicely and shot very nicely. Lots of really good shots of landscape and wartime Japan, which is really really good. Yeah, and it's just a really solid, really fun, enjoyable kind of action film. Start to finish, it's top quality. And I want anybody to go and watch it, and everybody. Because Masao Ono was like a real life hard nut. I believe he had, supposedly he was never defeated in all of his fights. And I think Sonny Chiba, if I remember right.
I don't know, actually. Yeah.
A few films, Karate Bullfighter, because he's supposed to have taken on a bull.
Karate Beer Fighter 2, I think.
What was that, sorry?
Karate Beer Fighter, was that?
Yeah, that also as well. Yeah,
there was a trilogy, apparently.
One would imagine they're all involving beating up some kind of animals.
Mm-hmm. Which they'll probably never get UK releases.
I do have a question, though. If some of you have watched some Korean martial arts movies, action movies, how have they ever tried to emulate Hong Kong cinema, and do they do it badly, or they're doing kind of their own action thing?
Definitely their own, I think, because even with like that City of Violence, that was often was very slick, very violent. Like whenever there was like a crucial cut, it would be a zoomed in shot of the limb being severed, and I think it, well, it's different from what we're getting nowadays for Hong Kong cinema.
Okay.
It depends on what kind of action film. If you're talking about martial arts, then the Korean action films, and surprisingly that I've seen, use Taekwondo, which obviously due to the nature of the art itself doesn't give itself to long complicated shapes and, you know, sparring like you would in a kung fu film. So the ones I've seen tend to be, you know, close-ups, lots of quick cuts, quick hard hits, kicks, flying kicks, punches, side kicks, that kind of stuff. Not complicated, kind of simple, high-impact kind of action. Because I know a lot of people were a bit critical about the action in City of Violence because of dipping in the tight camera and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
If I haven't seen it, so I wouldn't know, but from what I've seen of trailers and bits on YouTube and stuff, it looks pretty good.
What he said.
And good to the extent that it now has both UK and releases in America.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there exists some audience for a kind of Korean type of action.
Yeah.
And the movie you described, Mike, sounds more like, you know, it's not the focus, so it may as well be very story related when they do venture into the short bursts of action.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's more of a kind of a gripping, maybe a little bit, I was going to say soap opery, but it's kind of glossy and there's heart in it, but it's kind of I don't know how to explain it really. I suppose yeah, it is more story based. It's not a solid action. It's not a dumb kind of one big fight or one explosion to the next. All the fights in it are there for a reason. But it's good stirring, almost kind of old fashioned action film. I heartily recommend it.
Speaking of it, the movie that pops into my head when you describe it like that is actually Johnny To's Throwdown.
Scott, what did you see recently?
Well, nothing new really, but I did get The Protector the other day, and contrary to what I said about in Pop 16, it just wasn't really as good. Maybe I was in a particular mood that day, but I didn't think it helped that my family decided to join me. I was left somewhat awkward at some of the crappiness in it. Particularly the drug factory scenes with naked women. The one thing that was worth the price alone was the dialogue, and not really from Jackie, whose English is actually worse than this in his debut Battle Creek Brawl, but from Danny Aiello. I couldn't stop laughing, and neither could he when he was being massaged halfway through the film. You guys see it?
I think I watched half of it.
It's not been a priority of mine. even though it might be a camp classic because of the dialogue and general bad choices.
So. I have it, but I haven't watched it. I think that phrase is going into the Puff drinking game.
I have it, but I've not watched it.
Yeah, I feel myself saying it on a regular basis.
That's what Ken says. Regularly. Not seen it. I'm not going to even ask him if he's seen Young and Dangerous yet. I'm not even going to ask. Moving on.
I think most of the time Ken just looks at the listing, won't it? Scroll down. Category 2, nah, don't bother.
Category 2B, not bother.
Three, hey! Is it, won it? It's got raped in the title! Bye. Click.
You're not far off, that's the scary thing.
Sorry, Scott, for the interruption there, but the protector.
Yeah. Well, as I said before, combine elements of the Hong Kong cut and the US one, you'll get a pretty decent 80s action. End of.
Well, if you've made The Exterminator, I guess you're not going to make, you know, a long-lasting classic out of The Protector.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... I think you made that before, James Clickenhouse. I think The Exterminator came out before The Protector.
1980, I think.
Right.
Okay, finished.
Right, on to Ken.
It's Shaw Brothers time for once.
Great.
From Ken. Mm-hmm. And not just and not even the exploitation Shaw Brothers and the odd productions that came out of the production house. It's a Chang-Chi film. And it's a Venoms film. Look at that. It's called The Daredevils. AKA Mike Banner, you should know. What's the AKA?
Circus Bastards. No?
Actually has apparently three different AKAs, and that might be a
Shaolin Daredevils.
AKA Daredevils of Kung Fu, AKA Magnificent Acrobats. And you know what, the latter...
I'm sure it's called Shaolin Daredevils somewhere as well.
Yeah.
And Circus Bastards.
But Magnificent Acrobats sort of sums it up, and... It's a light film coming from Chang-Chi, light meaning it plays it somewhat safe. He has most of the Venom's troupe intact, which in this case includes Philip Kwok, Chang Sheng, Lu Feng, Sun Jian, and Lo Meng. The first four are the ones that features more prominently. Lo Meng is only in it for about 20 minutes. Again, a revenge tale, but the twist, or I don't know if it's a twist, but I've never experienced this, but they basically use their street performing skills, the martial arts skills and acrobat skills, to infiltrate the military and the revenge for their brother. So it's unusual for me to see these opera performers actually almost play characters like that. It's not like they're swordplay fighters that happen to use opera techniques. They actually are sort of circus acrobats in this film, and part of that works, the combination between acrobatics and weapons fights, and part of it really doesn't, because it seems to rely on props the way Jackie Chan subsequently did, but they don't do it as well. So the action choreography comes and goes a little bit, but what is good is actually really terrific, because these guys were obviously extremely talented acrobats and play off each other in that regard extremely well. So overall, a light, easily digestible effort from Chang-Chi. And just worth a watch, but don't expect a classic. I think you, Mike, spoke of it had the room of being one of the lesser Venoms flicks, but you know, it's decent.
Well, I think it's considered a lesser flick because isn't it a modern setting for the film?
It is actually. I had, for some reason, a feeling that it was a bike film. I don't know why, but it's set at the beginning of the 1900s, I think, because you have like cars and guns and stuff like that. So.
More
modern than other Venom flicks such as Five Venoms and stuff.
I think that's one of the reasons why some fans don't get on with it. Perhaps they like the real ancient kind of period costume films.
Which I find strange watching it, to be honest, because I don't mind the departure. You should really mix it up and see what you can do with these players. And, much of what they do actually, is worthy of mention in fan circles. It's just that it's not a movie that relies on a big story and huge emotions. And even though it features, the usual Chang'e heroic depths, often bloody, they sort of play around with the idea to add a little humor after certain depths, which I appreciate. I mean, you can't do the same over and over and over again. It's always worth trying something new.
This week, well, actually last night, the movie I watched was Exodus, and joining me for this little brief review, we also have Ken, who has also watched Exodus.
Yeah, last weekend.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like a little team review.
But not two opposing opinions, though.
Mm-hmm.
We do have the same like opinion, positive opinion. So in brief, Stu?
Yeah, well, the movie's basically about a cop who sort of uncovers a secret, almost sort of like a secret organization where women are planning to kill men, and they conduct their little meetings in the ladies' bathroom.
And that's all you should say, because the director of that film, Pang Ho-chung, or Edmund Pang, he works with these very odd plot summaries, very naughty plot summaries, and very wrong plot summaries. But there's always some thought behind that, always some clever thought, always some quirky, offbeat thought. I mean, the movie he made before this, Isabella, that's a movie about incest, basically. So he knows how to catch audiences' attention, and Exodus is a prime example of that as well.
Yep, and the movie's got its own set of kind of stars of the moment. We've got Nick Chung, who he has kind of hit big recently with sort of the election movies as well as On the Edge.
Yeah, he did well in that.
Mm-hmm. And also the seasoned veteran Simon Yam
as the cop.
Exactly.
And Nick Chung plays the pervert that tries to uncover this conspiracy. It sounds really offbeat and weird, people, but we still like this film.
It kind of reminded me, I think just for the style of the music and sort of the moody elements to it, reminded me perfectly of Old Boy. Sort of like the opening sequence, where there's no sound, it's just the quiet, I think it was piano music playing.
Yeah.
But the scene is actually, a dozen police officers in speedos and flippers beating the fuck out of a man with a phone book and a hammer.
It's a long, long, long pullback that starts on an image of the Queen. And you wonder, okay, there's the Queen, there's the Queen, there's a Frogman, okay. There's more Frogman. And there's the unlucky victim of it all. But isn't it strangely, despite the content being as wacky as it sounds, isn't it strangely atmospheric at the same time? The whole thing.
It's just got this thing to it. I usually thought it was going to be something along the lines of Men Suddenly in Black. Just where it was going to play more to the wacky side. Where it was almost like they've got their ear against the lavvy door listening to the women talk. But no. It was a bit of a curveball for me because I was expecting more laugh out loud comedy more than this. That's just so evil and wrong.
But that's the thing, not to go too deep into it. I think it's a laugh out loud comedy when I think of the film, but not when I watch the film. Because the atmosphere doesn't allow you to, you know, laugh out loud, you know, like a Stephen Chow movie or anything like that. It's definitely atmospheric and another worthwhile entry in the Edmund Pang catalogue of films that just keeps expanding and surprising.
Have any of you guys seen any Edmund Pang movies?
Think so.
No.
I think it's our turn to shame them.
I'm making a list tonight. Well, it's a good thing. The only problem with Exodus, to be honest, is that it doesn't neatly and smoothly invite any new viewers to the Edmund Pang universe, because it's so different and so it's in a way it's inaccessible, I think. So if you really start from the beginning and watch You Shoot, I Shoot, wonderful comedy, Men Suddenly in Black, well basically go in order. After Men Suddenly in Black is Beyond Our Ken, AV, Isabella, and now Exodus.
And now Trivial Matters.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he has some more stuff going on. I think at the either the Hong Kong International Film Festival or Hong Kong Film Art, they've awarded some funds for an upcoming project of his. And you know, if he's gone this far and made so many politically incorrect plot summaries, you know, anything can happen. Maybe he'll do a rape movie next.
It might be a musical. Yeah. But I'll give you my thoughts on Trivial Matters soon enough, because I'm getting back into the mood to watch Pang's backlog, so I'll probably start with that. And I think that's us for our last movies watched. So, moving on over to our questions this week. Martin asks us, Hong Kong cinema is very often melodramatic. What are your favourite scenes of a melodrama that really put a lump in your throat? Also, which ones made you laugh when you weren't supposed to? I think we'll give this one to Ken.
Just because he's a drama fag?
Exactly.
Yeah, for me, melodramas is changed the way I judge melodramas compared to 10 years ago. Because I prefer the more subtle melodrama rather than the, you know, screamingly loud melodrama. And there are poor examples of the latter. Let's say in a movie that I overall like, All About Along, the Chiang Fat movie directed by Yoni To. I always loved that when I first saw it, but over the years has grown tired of the way Yoni To creates melodrama in that film. It's not subtle and they are basically screaming their lungs out and it's not really deserved. But that degree of intense screaming can be deserved, and you have an example of that in Lost in Time, the Derek Yee film, where it's been building and building and building, and all of a sudden the Cecilia Chung's character comes to a point where she just loses it and just sits down on the street and starts screaming. And that's a favorite moment of mine because it is well deserved. It's actually a spoiler warning, so I'll just say a moment in An Autumn's Tale where, you know, it's not much of a spoiler, I'll just say this, a separation that appears between the two characters towards the end of the film is one of my favorite moments in a melodrama, because it is actually just the music and the looks of the characters in their respective settings that does it for me. So nowadays, that's the drama I really do appreciate. And in terms of what has made me laugh, for some reason I kept thinking of the Daniel Leaf movie, A Fighter's Blues, with Andy Lau. And he has a reunion with his daughter. I believe the daughter lived in Thailand and was basically brought up Thai, and there was this moment between them, oh daddy, oh daughter, oh daddy, and they embrace, and it really was so over the top, and so you didn't really care for the story that much either, and when they just desperately threw out that extreme melodrama on there, I did chuckle to myself, and some ending moments of Fly Me to Polaris, the Cecilia Cheung film, that's also turns comedic for me. So I'm in the camp of more subtle melodrama, and Autumn's Tale is a good example of that.
Scott?
Well, right away, one of the few films that didn't make me laugh was Beloved Son of God, starring Kent Cheng. Did you do a review of it, Ken?
Yeah, I did a review of it, and I believe you did a review of it.
That's right. Yeah. I guarantee this will be putting lumps in people's throats, but at the same time, it'll probably make your finger hover over the mute button. I thought it was better than the first film, Why Me, which is just too long and boring, really.
It's a semi-sequel to it, actually. Yeah.
But
it's a sort of an impossible sequel, but it is a continuation of the first film, in a way.
Story-wise, yeah, but events, not so, because it's kind of reshot at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, in for spoiler reasons.
Yep.
But, Kent does try and get the audience's sympathy to his character, but there's a lot of kind of silly antics and outdated cliches. Personally, I don't think Hong Kong cinema has shown an acceptable and politically correct representation of someone at disadvantage. To an extent, that kind of goes on to Heart of the Dragon, no matter how much of a reaction it is. Yeah, it's, particularly the end is quite tear-jerking. If you want a melodramatic film from Hong Kong cinema, I recommend you check out Beloved Son of God. Wuma and Maggie Cheung are out there. Very good. Alongside Kent. Mike?
Oi.
Stu? Scott?
Okay.
Ken?
Doing anything to avoid the question.
I'm thinking, usually, go with what I first think of. So as soon as I read the question earlier, giving away a puff secret there, guys, of the early scripting. The first film that popped into my head was The Killer, with Chow Yun-Fat. So that's definitely got oodles of melodrama. I think
not subtle at all.
Fits bang into the description, you know, to a definition of what melodrama is, I think. With the kind of stock characters, jaded hitman, etc., etc., obsessed cop, blah, blah, blah. You know, lots of big emotions and crying, sweeping music, that kind of thing. Touching moments, doves. But the ending, the very, very ending... spoiler! When,
had everybody take their headphones off.
Have you all seen the film?
Yeah.
Yeah,
good.
Yes.
The bit when Chow Yun-Fat's dying, and he's reaching across, he's trying to crawl across the ground. I think that's really touching.
Mm. And, operatic.
Yeah.
But he definitely gets away with at that point, because it's well deserved, because you're invested that much into the story, and it's that bit of irony, I guess, when he's shot in the eyes.
Yeah, well, the whole film is large, isn't it, and grand and in your face and bombastic. So having that kind of level, you know, going with the crazy gunfights and the action, that the emotions are kind of up to the same level of the crazy action. But it works. If you know, if you buy into it, then it ends up rather affecting at the end, I think, and quite touching.
Yeah, Hong Kong cinema has always been like that in a way, in terms of over the top melodrama. It's not a uncommon thing. I think it's more rare that someone tries to do, you know, some subtle digs at your heart and your throat, and see if they can reach you. And I welcome that challenge. But as you said, The Killer is a good example where the bombastic and the operatic nature just works. However cheesy you want it to feel, or want it to be, it gets to you by the end.
Well, I mean, if you create a world that people want to, you know, buy into, and you do it with enough passion and you know, talent and vigor, then you know you can buy into things that are maybe melodramatic and over the top and crazy, and you know, logic. You know, you can suspend disbelief and drop logic for a second and not think, well, surely he'd be killed by now, or why didn't he do this, or why didn't he hide behind that, etc., etc.
Reload.
Yeah. You know, you drop those kind of thoughts because the story and the emotion takes over.
It's cinema, too. I mean, that's the magic of cinema, to really use a cliche. That they can, you can be transferred in that way, too, to emotional places, not necessarily, you know, lodged in reality and onto the ground.
And speaking of no reality, the kind of, once again, instinctively, the first thing that popped into my head when, with the question, you know, of something that made you laugh when you shouldn't have, I thought of Donnie Yen in Iron Monkey, where there's a moment in that where he's with Yu Rongguang and the bird, I don't know what her name is, and they've been doing that awesome thing where he's slicing bits of some vegetable into a wok from like a quite a big distance and plop it into the middle of the wok every time, which I thought was quite impressive at the time. But then it goes to a bit of I'm sure they say something about his son, and Donnie Yen kind of turns away to face the camera, biting the end of his fist, choking back the tears, trying not to show that he's crying and stuff. And I believe his son, or, you know, girl actor in this case, is doing the same, if I remember rightly.
But that wasn't mixed in with the scene where he accidentally ate the hot peppers.
I don't even remember that.
But I'm not sure what he done. He must have...
Yeah,
he had a quick bit, but there was shots where he turned to the camera and kind of bit into his fist because the peppers were that hot.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Jin Wang took him into the clinic.
Yeah, but Donnie Yen is quite possibly one of the worst screen actors I have ever seen. And so when he tries, you know, this emotional moment when he's trying to be all stoic, and it could be quite a touching scene or quite a touching moment, quite, you know, tender. Actually, it's a bit comical. I couldn't take it seriously at all.
So what you're trying to say is stop greeting and kick someone.
Yeah, Donnie Yen can't act for toffee. That's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm.
Just let him beat up people instead.
I'm not even a massive fan of his choreo or anything like that either. Generally not much of a Donnie Yen fan. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't deny the fact that he's got a lot of serious martial arts skills. And some of his choreo is quite good, but on the whole, he's not a fan.
Oh well.
And talk about a man who loves himself as well. Unbelievable.
You're not kidding. Let's pose. Let's pose.
I can't remember if I mentioned this before on this one, but if you went to his old site, his old US site, there used to be a shot of him lying on the bonnet of a car with his shirt kind of unbuttoned down to his belly button. All looking all greasy and like baby lotioned up. Big grin on his face.
Well, wasn't he voted like sexiest Asian bachelor or something?
I have no idea. I'm sure he loved that. He was probably sitting at his computer. Vote Donny. Vote Donny. Vote Donny. Vote Donny.
I voted 500 million times. Yeah. Not me.
Every film tends to have a few shots of him kind of striding towards camera looking hard. Like in SBL when he hits that guy into the, you know, he gives him an uppercut, I think, and he turns around and in slow-mo he's walking with his tight vest on.
That's how he bashed Timmy Hung up.
Yeah, didn't he give us brain damage? Amazing. But there's just always a moment like that in a Donnie Yen film.
Where Donnie Yen uses the crippling fist.
Well, no, I meant as in, like, he says to the director, I know what would work in this bit. If I turn round and look really hard and you make it go slow motion. Yeah, good idea, Don. Yeah, brilliant. That works its way into all films.
Well, slow motion isn't necessarily what I associate with Donnie Yen.
Well, yeah. Indeed. See, I mean, detouring slightly, but Iron Monkey is the kind of film that the more I've watched Asian film and the more I've tasted from different countries and different years and different styles, the less I've liked Iron Monkey. It was one of the first few kind of action films I liked because, you know, there was big talk about it, and it's, you know, a lot of people consider it a classic. But the more I've watched, every time I watch it every few years, I like it less and less. The under cranking and everything just does my head in. But I will say, the girl who plays Wong Fei Hung kicks ass in that film. Oh yeah, I'm so plugging this site. I mean, look at that.
What is actually doing in that picture?
Yeah,
Donnie Yen.com.
That's just done.
What's going on below the waistline? That's what I'm asking.
Absolutely nothing. Donnie's just thinking, God, I'm awesome. And that's where that face comes from. And they probably said to her, hey, Donnie, for this shot, we want you to think about something you love. He's like, God, I love me.
He's like, no need to think, my friend. No need to think. Just looking in the mirror in the corner.
Peaches and cream.
Still,
talk about a detour, by the way.
Yeah, no.
Still, I'm going to end up buying Flashpoint, and I'm going to go and I'm going to buy Empress and the Warriors as well. I mean, for all the ragging I've just done on Donnie Yen,
you just love him anyway.
Well, no, I was going to say he's still possibly the most interesting action star in Hong Kong at the moment. I mean,
it's only one doing action. It's the only one trying to create action cinema. I guess, you know, many are thankful for that because many still believe we are stuck in the 80s. And rate Hong Kong cinema dead just because we aren't getting movies like 20 years ago. So, I mean, to rag a little bit on people.
Yeah. Well, I was probably being a bit harsh on the action, to be honest. I do quite like the action. I just think, you know, it gets a little bit overhyped, quite possibly, by a few people. I mean, Sha Po Lang got hyped up to the hilt. I think that was mainly based on the fact that, one, it was the kind of Sammo Hung action that hadn't been in Hong Kong cinema for years, so it stood out a mile. And, two, it was a Hong Kong action film that was actually a decent film as well. I wouldn't say it was an amazing film. It was a kind of a solid kind of triad gangster police film with Simon Yam as a cop. Who'd have thunk it? But yeah, combine the two, the good action and that, and you know, it stands out a mile from what's going on in Hong Kong at the moment.
Speaking of stuff that is unusual for Hong Kong cinema, has anyone seen one of the first Donnie Yen films ever called Mismatched Couples?
No.
Is that the one with the breakdancing?
Exactly.
Yeah. I was seen it perhaps on YouTube. It was kind of good, but the dancing
It's wacky and insane and absolutely sort of wonderful at the same time, because Donnie Yen, as soon as he wakes up in his first scene, he's basically dancing already. it starts in his bedroom in front of his mirror and jumps out on top of cars and he dances away. It's I don't know if maybe a year after Drunken Tai Chi was made, this came out. So it's the very much the opposite to Drunken Tai Chi, I imagine. Mm-hmm. Still a fun film. I like that. Made me happy. And Yuen Woo-ping is in a large, over-the-top, wacky role. I believe he just gets abused and smashed up in each and every scene, basically. Mugging like crazy.
Was Jun Chung-yang in a rather wacky role, too?
Don't remember at all, him specifically, but obviously, you know, it's a Yuen Clan film, so anyone can fit in there.
What was the question we were talking about?
Melodrama.
I think it's probably just my turn to answer. It's a fairly short one anyway.
Yeah.
So my answer, well, it's not really a melodrama, but the scene that stands, well, the film that stands out most to me is Infernal Affairs 2. The scene where Eric Tsang, it's just the scene where it's the handover and everyone's celebrating it. So it's a shot of doors opening and Eric Tsang walking into a room where everyone's celebrating, drinking, and he's shaking hands with everyone, and it cuts to just the shot of him, like, sort of, he must be on like a balcony himself, looking at a photo of his dead wife, and you see the tears running down his face. That chokes me up every time. I kind of, it doesn't seem like it, but whenever I watch it, I just feel so sorry for him.
It's an obvious symbolism also for the overall state of the world. Mm-hmm. 1997 and everything.
Yeah. But that was probably the main scene that choked me up. I actually think it is quite hard because there's not been that many films I've kind of gotten all choked up at.
Sorry, interrupt you slightly there, Stu.
Right.
If you permit me.
Permitted.
Because you just mentioned choking up. I actually cried at the end of Windstruck. A Korean film? Yeah, Ken, it's a Korean film.
What's a Korean film?
With Jun Ji Hyun doing a kind of, you know, rom-comage and all that. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the film, I was actually... I was crying like a little girl with little pigtails.
And while we admit stuff, I've actually watched a Korean film, and I've cried at the end of that, and that was Save the Green Planet.
Oh, that's got a sad ending.
Yeah.
Despite being
the most insane film ever, it actually is genuinely touching.
And if you're playing the puff drinking game, take your shot now.
Because of? Because I have seen that film, so you shouldn't take...
No, Mike spoke the same time as you, saying...
Sorry, Ken. I've got it, but I haven't watched it.
Ah, there you go.
Somebody's going to be shit-faced at the end of this podcast if they're actually playing along. Indeed.
There is actually one film outside of Hong Kong cinema which kind of choked me up, was the Japanese film Spirited Away. The scene where, what was it, Chihiro remembers Haku's real name, where it's like sort of the gliding through the sky.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, so shut up. I better take my headphones out, actually. Proceed.
Ruins the moment.
Stu cried at the cartoon. Stu cried at the cartoon.
Fuck you.
Well, it's Ghibli, or probably
you'll get cut off.
I didn't, well, it's a choke up moment, not a cry moment.
Of course.
It's heartwarming. And that's what, like, who cares if it's a cartoon, if it's suck, well, it's an achievement. It's not that I'm trying to dig my way out, I'm just trying to explain how bloody good this film is.
It is a good film.
It just caused me to sit and watch all the Studio Ghibli films. I think it's pronounced Ghibli.
Yeah.
Aye.
But you know, it's relatively well known that their films, you know, do reach you in that regard, and I think many quote or reference Grave of the Fireflies as one of these. Yeah, very tough movies and touching movies.
That was a one sad film. Just by the end of it, you're like, whoa.
Is it as sad as Watership Down?
It's not sad, it's just depressing.
So is Watership Down. Rabbits getting killed and shit.
Yeah, but this is more of a deeper, like, poverty-struck type film. Not, like, animals being mauled.
Yeah, because you find that entertaining, don't you?
Aye.
Big bastard.
Put them in a steel cage. Put some fucking hot sauce on them. There you go. Look, that's got them going. But aye, there's not really been that much moments. Although, no, I'm not going to say it. We'll move on to our second question if everyone's ready.
Yep.
Right. Martin's gave us a second great question. Recommend me an Eric Tsang film in which he has a strong role and which isn't a part of the Infernal Affairs trilogy. And right away, I actually think me and Ken have the same answers.
I would say so, yeah.
Possibly some of the films we've already discussed. There's definitely been an Eric Tsang theme to the show so far. Mm-hmm. Many mentions of films that he starred in. And a direct mention, and a question about him.
But go ahead and mention the film that you are thinking about still.
I just had a very sure answer because I didn't put much work into this script. Mine's is Alan and Eric between Hello and Goodbye, and main reason I'm actually stealing one of Ken's quotes is it's the movie where Eric Tsang grew up.
Yeah, indeed. And I was surprised when I saw that film that, you know, it's a weak film partially. Alan Tam is in it, so automatically that film is going to be weak. So I think he's as good as George Lamb in terms of acting. So there you go. Vacuum. But even Maggie Cheung isn't really utilized well, but it's Eric Tsang's movie, and I expected it to be one of those films where everyone is crying their hearts out and their, you know, 100 decibel melodrama just grates and grates and never allows, you know, to be actually touching. But he's employing that subtle approach, and oh, he does it so well. Before I saw it, you mentioned it during the podcast that it's sort of that was a movie that things started for him as an actor as well. Moving, you know, into something that people perhaps wasn't expecting him to do, which is drama, and do it well. I mean, he communicates so much in so many scenes by just being there, by just sitting there. It's a marvelous performance, and he rightly won the Best Actor Award that year, in 92. Another movie that you do think of, which is a strong Eric Tsang role, is another Peter Chan movie, actually. Peter Chan directed Alan and Eric, and he also directed Comrades, Almost a Love Story, where Eric Tsang has a supporting role as a gangster boss that Maggie Cheung eventually hooks up with, and it's a very, very kind gangster boss, and it seems so easy for Eric Tsang to do this, and you still don't expect it that from him. It's that natural talent that you sort of is surprised by every time, because if you have experienced the 80s stuff with him as part of the My Lucky Stars films or any film where he's the, you know, the fat comedic sidekick, then you know it's a stretch to think of him as a award-winning dramatic actor, and yet you're not surprised at all when you see it.
I like the scene where I think Maggie Cheung must have been working in some sort of massage parlor. That was how they met, and she was almost scared of all these tattoos he had. So sort of to cheer her up, he had Mickey Mouse tattooed into the centre of his back.
Yeah.
That's all, I just thought it was a nice scene.
Yeah, there are, and the third film I'm thinking about is still, again, directed by Peter Chan. So we're hitting on a theme here where Rectang is more comfortable, and that is the going home segment from the first three horror trilogy of short films, and Rectang is very good in that one as well, alongside Leon Lai, which has never been better. That's his strongest role. So and Infernal Affairs. The reason perhaps Martin is asking this question is many people has discovered Eric Tsang being a solid erratic actor through this trilogy of films, and are now looking to discover more if they're, you know, maybe they're convinced there aren't any more, because they have that image of him you know, as the loud comedy man.
What about you, Mike?
Well, I'm probably fitting into kind of the category of what Ken's just mentioned there, which is I kind of what I knew Eric Tsang from watching Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung films, having him in, you know, My Lucky Stars and Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Stars.
Yeah, it's the same for me.
The awful Oh Yes Sir, where he plays a female character. He's not a very good female impersonator, and that's a pretty damn awful film all round, starring Frankie Chan and stuff. I wouldn't recommend it.
That's not the only female role he took up there in Project S.
He appears in Dragon, that film. Yeah,
just one ugly woman.
Is it him and Jackie Chan?
Yep.
Yeah. In fact, that's best in it. The whole thing.
Yeah, the rest of the film's a bit of a kind of a slightly generic, kickboxing-y action film. But, yeah, so when I watched Infernal Affairs for the first time, that was when I first was like, oh, he can actually act. He's not just some kind of, like, annoying buffoon. He's actually got some depth and ability. So, I mean, to the answer to the question, acting roles, no, but it didn't state acting, it just said role. So I thought I'd mention a couple of things that he's done, you know, outside of acting, which is he co-wrote 36 Chamber of Shaolin, the Lau Gar Lung film, obviously starring Gordon Liu, an absolute classic Shaw Brothers film, Shaolin Master Killer in America. Yeah, and I was hella surprised to find out that he was the writer on that.
He appears in either that or some other Lau Gar Lung films. You can spot him here and there.
Yeah, he was in Executioners of Shaolin. One point.
Challenge of the Masters as well.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a ninth monk for maybe a few seconds too.
That's another cracking film. But yeah, I mean, outside of being a bit of a buffoon and obviously having some straight acting ability, co-writing that is rather impressive, because that's, you know, an all-time classic kung fu flick. What I was going to talk about is him as a director, which is also something that's probably overlooked. I mean, I can't say as I've dabbled into many of his films, but The Loot, which stars David Chang, Norman Chu, and Phil Coe. And that's an absolute classic kung fu film. lots of Wuxia style double crossing, double dealing, who knows who the villain is kind of treachery and all that, which is all really well handled and actually pretty interesting, keeps you gripped, and just some comedy, but light on not as much comedy as I thought it would be.
It was actually funny. It was genuinely funny, which is surprising in any kung fu film, to be honest, that they nail an aspect like that.
Well, more about, not so much about pratfalls and, you know, fart gags. It was kind of more on the relationship David Chang and Norman Chu and stuff, wasn't it? And that features just some stunning action at the end, especially. Philip Coe is on fire at the end of that film. It's all an absolute total classic. And also he'd made, just before that, The Challenger, which I have, but I haven't seen. Drink up, people.
It's basically the same cast, isn't it?
I think it's pretty much... I think Challenger was made a year before, and I think The Loop was basically just a bit of a rehash, essentially. Same crew and cast and everything. But those two films are... The Loop is an absolute classic. Can I highly recommend it to anyone who is a Kung Fu fan. And also, as I mentioned, just another film I know of is Armour of God, the Jackie Chan film.
Oh, right, aye.
I believe Eric Tsang was directing that until... for just the first few weeks, was it? Or maybe even not even that, until Jackie fell out of a tree and smashed his head. And I'm not sure whether he was off the project from then or if he was busy doing something else, because they obviously had to wait for Jackie to recover. Mm-hmm. So when it came back, Jackie was shooting the film himself. I'm a soup. I mean, I don't know if... is there a Bay Logan commentary or something on the Armour of God DVD?
No.
Is there not? No. I mean, what I understood, I mean, I might be making this up, is that it was because Eric Tsang was off doing other projects, so Jackie had to take the reins.
Well, he was both acting and directing Eric Tsang, so those years, 86 and 87, so I haven't heard anything about any bad blood between them. It's just, you know, it's a movie industry, you move on.
Yeah, well, it would have been very interesting to... you know, what the film would have been like if Eric Tsang had carried on directing it.
Did you see that it was the only non-scope film Jackie was like kind of in charge of? It was more 185 to 1. The other films are full scope.
That's a thing. That's a thing many notice, and obviously they did need to carry on the original. From the original footage, so they couldn't just open it up. But yeah, it's the first film that Jackie Chan has short hair in for 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and when he got back,
well, that's the Eric Tsang stuff, isn't it? The short hair.
Yeah, exactly. Probably when they went to Yugoslavia.
Yeah, okay, just a really long flight back to Hong Kong. Well, no, it was even Hong Kong he went back to, was it?
I don't know if they shot. Where they shot elsewhere, if they shot elsewhere, when they did pick it up. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the film too well.
I know Eric Tsang presents game shows and chat stuff in Hong Kong as well.
Mm-hmm. He has that aura of being a good entertainer, good toastmaster.
Yeah. Well, my girlfriend actually hates him.
For his game shows.
Yeah, well, apparently he's incredibly annoying and over the top and stuff. Kind of like his comedy performances. I was going to say, it's all round, he's a bit of a renaissance man. I mean, he's dabbled in, like, you know, writing, producing, directing, acting, TV presenting, everything. And not only has he just had a go at everything, he's actually got stuff in each category that's very good. You know, acting, writing and producing, he's got some classic films in there.
And lately also he's been very supportive of new talent in Hong Kong. He's been producing a handful of films from new directors, most notably recently a film I talked about during the last podcast, The Pie Dog.
Yeah.
Well, he appeared in that one. Now I don't remember if he produced it or not, but he's been that guy, that supportive guy of the industry, just like Andy Lau is with the Focus First Cuts program. Eric Tsang wants to nurture new talent, and that is heartwarming for me, to be honest. That someone cares to that extent.
Did he produce not long ago a Jingle Ma film, Happy Birthday?
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but he did produce films. It. Too. Yeah, one of the new ones. Which is not a new talent, though, Jingle Ma. I mean, he's a veteran cinematographer and a crap director.
I was about to say, is he a talent?
He's an excellent cinematographer.
Cinematographer, yeah, a director.
You know, Tokyo Raiders and what have you. It's...
Woo!
For instance. Anyway.
Let's quickly steer this away before we start mentioning, you know, EC. Stu could be all
who is tempted? Who is tempted?
So, Scott.
Yeah.
What do you think about Eric Zhang?
I find him a safe bet. I pretty much like anything he's in. Stu had to go first and say the one I was going to say. I'll air between Hello and Goodbye. Bit of an odd film, but it's bound to draw a tear or two. I wasn't really sure what to make of it, other than a kind of laid-back, morbid, fictional take on the leading three. It did capture the instance of a tearjerker, but I kind of failed to see how I got there and felt a bit silly too. Eventually got rid of it, but might pick up again. I first saw the trailer for it and I fancied it. It was alright.
Right, so, Ken, I think you've got some underrated film segment to be doing.
This week again, indeed. But a fairly known movie in fan circles of cult movies. A movie called Taxi Hunter. Has anyone heard of that?
It rings a bell.
Directed by Herman Yao, starring Anthony Wong. Made the same year as their other famous collaboration, The Untold Story, or Bun Man, The Untold Story. But it's not even category 3, it's a very well made vigilante thriller based on an actual, the story that it inspired, was inspired by, it was a real life taxi strike in Hong Kong, and the basic story is Anthony Wong's wife is run over by a taxi driver and he goes on a rampage, a violent rampage, which sounds like a cheap, quick movie to make, and there wouldn't be anything wrong with that, but there's a reason Anthony Wong has quoted it as one of his favorite movies, and when his character, this very mild-mannered character, turns to this revenge path, it's not an easy transition to make. I mean, you can't just buy guns and, you know, be Rambo about it. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult thing to actually handle guns and stuff, and it's a difficult thing to switch from being his mild man itself to someone who needs to take revenge but doesn't necessarily know how and how to channel that anger. So it's a very human portrayal by Anthony Wong, and Herman Yao keeps that character direction going very well, and it's effective within its rating. It's merely category 2, but it's the effect of violence rather than the bloodshed that is the point of that film, and the combination of a thriller and human comedy works very well, and it's one of the, let's say, top 3 Herman Yao films where he's really in his element, combining satire, black comedy, and tough violence. And it's a shame it's forgotten and hidden underneath The Untold Story, which is, you know, 10 times more extreme in the gore department, but not as good of a film. Mm. Far from it. So if anything, if awards were to be handed out fairly, then someone should have given Anthony Wong the Best Actor Award for Taxi Hunter rather than The Untold Story. But anyway.
Oh. Okay. I don't know, I think it must have just been the title, but it just kept ringing bells of Taxi Driver. But it was Anthony Wong going, was it after Taxi Drivers or just anyone?
Yeah, it was Taxi Drivers indeed, he was going after. He was not one himself.
Yeah.
And the cop is played by the one of the guys from Iron Monkey, Yurong Guang, the main actor. And Stephen Chow's cohort, Mandat, plays a very wacky cop. That's the only bad thing about Taxi Hunter. He is allowed to be who he is when he's in a Stephen Chow film, which sort of takes you out a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to the band segment. Sort of just a short update this week, mainly because I've had quite a busy week. I've only managed to get through the one DVD, and that was Exodus. Mainly I just wanted to be prepared for the show, so I had to watch something. Plus, I'd mentioned the week before I was going to watch both Trivial Matters and Exodus, but I've only managed to get into one. So, yep, we're knocking it down to 27 movies left. Should get there soon.
Still impressive.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'll be able to knock off Mare soon. Still going to be another busy week, but there's time for movies. So, moving on over to sort of the last segment of the show is the plug-in. I'm taking the back seat on this one, so, Ken?
Reruns of plugs, in a way, but I'm going to mention one I haven't mentioned in a long, 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 long time. LoveHKFilm.com. Mm-hmm. Which is the place to go for the very newest reviews of new films, very honest reviews, and some of the funniest reviews you'll find out there.
Yeah.
And it's always quality offered up. And outside of that, SoGoodReviews.com. And you all know why.
Mm-hmm. No, why?
Yeah. You'll know why you should visit. Over and over again. Because if you have a movie review of a film called Killing in the Nude, then that's a reason to visit SoGoodReviews.com.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing going on there.
Okay, I do actually have a plug for this week, and it is DonnieYen.com.
DonnieYen.us.
No.com.
And you'll know why.
Ah, you stole my plug.
Okay, Mikey, you can do what's left of your plugs then.
I can't believe you stole that from me, Shu. You know how much I love Donnie Yen. I'm obviously going to plug www.greenfandvd.com. Which we now have some on-street dates for the films. Possibly a POF exclusive. Although, actually, it's been listed on Play, I didn't realise. awesome. It'll be available in all major retailers. Ninja and Ancient China will, on May the 26th.
Right.
And awesome. Then... hang on a sec, there's a note here. Here we go. And then Return of the Deadly Blade will be available in all major retailers on the 28th of June. So to be...
Wait, wait that long?
Oh. It'll be worth the wait, probably.
Mm.
So now you've actually done the thing we spoke of, Mike. Yeah, you've actually gone beyond your street. And now you're onto, you know, the big streets.
Online is the future, my friend.
Yeah, online is the future. I'll take any sales I can get. I'm not picky.
Okay, Scott, I guess you have to plug.
DDUK, Asian DVD Guide, Kung Fu Cinema, and anywhere you can get your hands on Heroes 2, which is getting released on Tuesday the 8th.
Okay, well, that's us. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Ken.
Mike.
Bye.
Right. Aye. Catch you later.
We're all just silently looking at pictures of Donnie Yen half naked now, aren't we? Conversation's dried up.